Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of a day for the 26th of Av. Today we're going to see Rav Moshe Feinstein discussing some of the limits on saving lives. I know that we just saw two of Rav Moshe Feinstein's yesterday. I do try not to always default to Rav Moshe Feinstein, but it is true that he wrote prolifically and productively, and many of his tshuvot are the right length for us, and he dated many of his tshuvot, not all, but many, so that on any particular day, I'll often find four or five options with Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvot. So in any case, I try not to always go to him, but he's always a good backup to go to, for sure, and he has many interesting discussions, and here's a particularly interesting one. This is from Igrot Moshe Yoredeya, Chelek Bet, Part 2, Simon Nuntet, Chapter 59, it's from the 26th of Av of Tufshin Chafhei of 1965. It's written to Yaakov Emanuel Shochid, who was a Chabad rabbi in Toronto, I think a very well-known Chabad rabbi in Toronto. And the case, as it becomes clear over the course of the tshuva, I'll just say it ahead of time, the case is that you had a teenager, it seems, and it seems like he needed psychiatric treatment. He was a danger to himself, he was a danger to others, I think. He wasn't manageable, and he needed to be hospitalized. And in this hospital they were going to be put into, they did not have kosher food, and they did not bring in outside food. It's a problem that, thank God, doesn't come up as much anymore, but in 1965 it was clearly a possibility that it could be happened that way. And so the question was, could he be hospitalized there? And I think Ramosha's tshuva is both not what we would have expected necessarily, and raises issues for many other areas of our lives to think about. So it's not only about this particular issue, but about the broad implications of this question. So he says, first you should know that you can't judge this kid to be a shote, meaning if he was a shote, so a shote is a halakhic category, so he was not in their right mind. So we today in English say not in their right mind, meaning they're not fully sane. But in halakha, a shote is somebody, or a shota, a man or a woman, is somebody who's therefore not responsible for their actions in a halakhic way. That has both leniencies and stringencies. It means they also can't perform any halakhic actions with any validity, and that can be a problem. So, for example, if a man becomes a shoteh, he can't give a get to his wife. He can't, so she's stuck then, because she can never get divorced if he's a shoteh, unless they find a time when he's healed. So it's not good or bad. I mean, it's bad to be a shoteh, and halakhically, it's not a leniency or a stringency to think of somebody as a shoteh. It's just what it is. So the Ramosha says, you can't think of this teenager as a shoteh, even though he does many terrible things, right? So he violates the Torah. He does things that are ra'la makom and ra'la briot. He hurts his relationship with Hashem and with other people. And the suggestion seems to have been that there's a Gemara in Sota and Daf Gimel that says that people don't sin unless nichnas bo ruach shtut, unless a spirit of insanity enters into them. So I think the suggestion had been, it's not, because I don't know why Rav Moshe would bring it up otherwise, but I think the suggestion was, so maybe since this kid is just going all over the place violating the Torah, maybe that qualifies to treat him as a shoteh. So Rav Moshe says that can't be right. It can't be that by virtue of what Rish Lakish says, that one doesn't sin unless there's a ruach shtut, unless there's a spirit of, you know, lack of being fully in control of themselves, and being not being in their right mind. He doesn't mean that in halakhic terms, because we punish people, right? So if we punish people, that means that we're treating them as being in their right minds in terms of liability for their actions. And Rav Moshe says, and there's obviously no greater shtut, no greater, so here shtut, silliness, insanity, craziness, lack of being in your right mind, than worshiping trees or stones and believing that they might help you or hurt you, as idolaters do. So while Rav Moshe uses the example of trees and stones, idolatry is worshiping anything other than Hashem. But he's using the extreme version to point out that when halakha says that we hold people liable for worshiping idolatry, that includes even something as apparently silly as stones and trees. I think it's worth pointing out that the people who were worshiping them wouldn't have seen it as silly. They had convinced themselves in whatever way they did. There are lots of explanations, but his point is that we don't, and this comes up today because I know people who will say that if somebody does something so evil, they say, oh, that person must just be crazy. And Rav Moshe is pointing out that halakhically, we don't accept that perspective. There are terrible things that are done, and the people who do them are liable and culpable for them, and they're not considered crazy. So here, too, with this young man, who in some sense is crazy because he's being institutionalized, but Rav Moshe is saying he doesn't have any evidence that he qualifies as a shoteh for halachic purposes in terms of absolving him of culpability for his actions. And that's important because if he was a shoteh, the argument could be, well, he's not obligated in mitzvot because he's a shoteh. He's not able to perform mitzvot, and therefore maybe he doesn't have to also be sure to eat kosher food. Rav Moshe's standard is, if somebody does something intending to do that, even though the need for it is silly and doesn't have any value, that's all the more true for this boy who didn't have a good education. He didn't have parents, apparently. He didn't have teachers. So the things that he's doing are just because he's undisciplined and wild. Nobody's taught him the right way, but that doesn't make him not liable and culpable for it. That's an important point as well, that just because somebody didn't have a great education doesn't mean that they're absolved of guilt for the things that they do. So he is obligated on the mitzvot, and so the people who are going to be giving him prohibited food, if they do, or allow him to, or they're putting him in a situation where he has to eat prohibited food, that's a problem of lifneiva. That's a problem of they're helping lead him astray. So then the medical part of it is the doctors say that he's mentally ill, and you treat that as an illness, and he's lacking in his intellectual ability or his psychological ability to understand right and wrong, as according to what his age, you know, what would be age appropriate for him, and therefore they think he has to go into this institution to be treated and then come out hopefully more fully capable of handling himself. So Rav Moshe says it's fine if we believe them, but it doesn't mean that the definition in medical terms of mental illness that would call for institutionalization and major treatment necessarily corresponds to the definition of shoteh in halacha. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, so far I have no good reasons that you're allowed to put him in there because he is a fully halachically capable Jew with problems and challenges, but halachically capable Jew who is obligated to keep mitzvot, obligated to avoid avirot, to avoid sin, to avoid transgressions, and the food there is all non-kosher. So then he says, it might be that if the doctors say that it's pikuach nefesh, that this is a life-threatening situation, meaning a young man with this psychological profile is likely perhaps one day in the future to try to commit suicide because of the distress that he feels, or it's likely that his violating the law will lead to a situation where the police try to catch him and he won't listen to them and he'll fight with them and they'll kill him, right? Or maybe they'll say that the fact that he has these mental illnesses shows that there's other things going on in his brain that will get worse and progress, and therefore you might think of it as pikuach nefesh, is saving lives. So if it's saving lives, this is what we need to do medically to save his life, you would think that we're allowed to do whatever we want to save people's lives. And that's going to be the question. Can we institutionalize this young man in a place where there's no kosher food because we think of it as life-saving? So I want to say I have a personal family story. This is my father, Alav Shalom, always told the family that when he was 8 years old, he had encephalitis, and that was a life-threatening illness. He was in the hospital, and his uncle was an important rabbi in Washington, D.C. at the time, Rabbi Arthur Bogner, Alav Shalom, and he came to the hospital and told my father, Alav Shalom, that he's ill, so when they give him food, he has to eat the food because he needs his strength, and therefore he should eat the food. And as he's leaving the hospital, my father said, what was that food? It was really great. It really tasted great. It turned out to be bacon. So years later, my father was somebody, an observant Jew, who had eaten bacon, knew what bacon tasted like, and had it. So the situation, Rav Moshe agrees, the situation of somebody who's ill and in the hospital, and the only food available is non-kosher food, and they need the food to help them keep their strength, that would be acceptable, and then this young man could be in this institution. The problem is that the only food that's allowed in that situation is the food that's necessary for the person who is deathly ill to be kept alive. So while that would be room to say it's allowed, he thinks here in this situation, it's not going to be. Because if you had a person who's observing mitzvot and cares about mitzvot and is careful about them, and they're in this situation, if you brought them to the hospital, now my father was a child at the time, so that's the difference as well, but if you brought them to the hospital and you say to this, you know, 18-year-old man, listen, you're deathly ill, in this hospital there's no kosher food, so eat what you need to. Right, so whatever the doctors tell you, you have to eat in order to stay alive and to foster your better, improved health, that you're allowed to do, and that's what he'll do. But he won't eat more than that. Right? The Adam Kasher, the proper good person, will do it for the to the extent that it's necessary for saving his life. But if we have a person, this young man, who unfortunately doesn't care about prohibitions of the Torah, and therefore when he's there, he will eat not only what's necessary for his health, but eat just what he wants to eat. When he's hungry, he'll just eat non-kosher food. When it's not necessary for his healing, that's prohibited, and therefore if Moshe thinks it's prohibited in terms of bringing him there as well, because it's sort of a lifneiver, right? It's not lifneiver to give him non-kosher food because he might need that for his life-saving sustenance. But the more than that is not allowed. So the truth is, Rav Moshe says, he himself, if he were to know, and now he's talking about this particular guy, any Jew, Rav Moshe is saying, if they were to know that they would not be able to control themselves if they go into a place like this to be healed, that they wouldn't be able to eat only that which is required for their health, and they'll end up violating the Torah in places that it's not allowed for their health, right, in places where it's not necessary for saving their lives, they'll violate other things, then it would be usher as well, even if it were true that they would die without going in there. Because Rav Moshe claims the lehit avod la'asot isurim lo nidchem ibnei pikuach nefesh. To want to violate the Torah is not allowed, even in terms of pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh allows us to, against our will, unfortunately, sadly, violate the Torah to save our lives. But to say, oh, this is great, pikuach nefesh lets me have, you know, more bacon. Right, so they bring you a portion, and they say, this is what you need to stay alive, and you eat, you say, that was great, can I have another one? So that's where we get the problem. Rosh says that even Pikuach Nefesh does not allow us to put ourselves in situations where we will want to violate the Torah. Now, Rav Moshe has a long proof of this, a long discussion of this, relatively long, that I want to go into, but I want to be delicate about it. But the presumption in Halacha was that when men have intercourse, when men have marital relations or sexual relations, that there must be an element of that that is that they have to want to be involved, that it's impossible for a man to be involved in such situations purely being forced into it, because the physical reaction that allows them to have such relations has some mental element to it. Meaning, if a man is completely, let's say, disgusted by a certain situation, and it would be, halakhically, the Gemara felt, it would be impossible for him to get himself involved in it. The first step of letting himself get involved in it is a certain desire to do that. That's an important background to the discussion Rosh is about to have, because the Kesef Mishnah pointed out that the Rambam had said that if somebody was forced to have relations with an arayot, with somebody with whom it's prohibited to have such relations. So, you know, a man is forced, God forbid, to have relations with his sister. So the Rambam says that man will be chayav mita, will be liable for the death penalty, even though they forced him to do it. That's because, the Rambam says, halachically, men cannot have such relations without some volitional, internal volitional aspect. They have to allow themselves in some way to get aroused, and that arousal is some internal, volitional, desired component. So, because the Mishnah pointed out, so the Rambam had said that, I'm sorry, so the Mishnah says, I don't understand, he's doing an act, but it's a coerced act, and we usually say that coerced acts are, even when they're prohibited, they're still patur, they still don't get the death penalty. So, for example, let's say somebody comes to you and says, worship idols, it's not allowed to be done in any situation. You have to let yourself, God forbid, even be killed. The person would have to let themselves even be killed rather than worship the idols. But if they do worship the idols, the Rambam said, it was be'onis, it was coerced, and therefore they're patur. Therefore, they're not liable. So the Kesef Mishnah said, yeah, idolatry, something like that, You can do it be'onus, coerced, without any desire on your own part, without wanting to do it. So to with eating, if somebody says to you, eat, you know, non-kosher food, in a situation where theoretically you should have to refuse, but you do, but it's just an act of chewing and swallowing. It doesn't show that you had any interest in doing it. But when it comes to relations, intercourse, there the halacha is, unless he had some desire for this endeavor, he wouldn't, you know, or allowed himself to in some way get aroused by it, he wouldn't have done, he wouldn't get aroused. And not getting aroused, you just can't do it. And therefore, since that element is to it, the Rambam thinks he's actually liable for the death penalty if he does it where he's not allowed to. So Rav Moshe doesn't understand. He says, because isn't that all part of the coercion? So his answer is, is that right? Shouldn't that be part of it? Why is that different? If I'm coerced to bow down to an idol or coerced to get myself aroused, I'm being coerced in both cases. So his answer is, his understanding is, that the whole leniency of onus only applies to external acts. It doesn't apply to the internal experience. And if in the internal experience, desire and wanting it has to be part of it, that becomes completely usur. That's not even in the leniencies of pikuach nefesh or the leniencies of coercion. So that means that in all the prohibitions that are permitted because of the danger of death or an illness or things like that, it doesn't allow wanting it. We're never allowed to want to eat the non-kosher food, to want to, you know, violate the Torah, whatever it is, to want to violate Shabbat. It always has to be that situations coerce us to it. And Rav Moshe says clearly also, by the way, that whatever applies to if there's an outside power saying, do this or I'll kill you, that also applies to allowing yourself to doing things that we need to do for healing. It's the same standard. Saving our lives, whether from an outside person threatening to kill us or saving our lives from an illness that has come our way, the standard is the same. And the standard for Rav Moshe, his understanding based on that example, was it has to be done without desire to do it. Right? And then he says, and it don't mean that you did it without desire to do it and then enjoyed it. So let's say, you know, if somebody says, in order to be healed, you're going to have a pork roast. Right? So you don't want to because you're an observant Jew and the person cares about observance, they don't want to. And they taste it and it's made with butter and it's this and it's heavenly. Not obviously not because it's usher, but it tastes great. So Rav Moshe says that's not the problem. The fact that in the middle of an event there's an enjoyment of it, if it was entered into for the purpose of saving one's life and against one's will, then the fact that later on there's enjoyment of it, that he thinks is fine. He relates to another sugya you have in Gemara and Pesachim and Chafei Amid Bet about lo efshar v'kamechaved. So the Gemara, the story there is hana'ah ba'alo ladam ba'al korcho. Let's say the pleasure comes to somebody against their will. An example, let's say, would be, let's suppose there's an avodah zarah that's burning incense or something, and the smell comes my way. So really, I'm not supposed to enjoy anything from an idolatry. So Abaye says it's okay, and Rava says it's asur, it's prohibited. But then the Gemara explains, if it's efshar v'kamechavein, if he could avoid it, and he decides he wants to do it, or v'lo efshar v'kamechavein, kuli alma lo pligev de asur. Or it's not possible to avoid it, but he also intends to enjoy it, so that's prohibited. But lo efshev, lo mechaved, everybody agrees he can't avoid it and he doesn't pay attention to it. Everybody agrees that it's allowed. The debate was efshev, lo mechaved, that it's possible for him to avoid it, and he doesn't avoid it, but he also doesn't intend to get pleasure. So there, Rava thinks it's us. Rav Moshe says, even according to Rava, but to want it to begin with, nobody ever said that that would be allowed. But if you didn't want it, and then the hana came your way, then that would be okay. And his example is also, for we have cases in halacha about women in terms of relations. So with men, we said that everything they want. Sorry, with men, we said that for them to have such relations must involve arousal to begin with, and that's why it's usur. With women, there are several sources that suggest that she's seen as being much more passive in the event. Rav Moshe points out, though, that there are sources in the Gemara that say, for all that she's passive, and therefore it's allowed for her to let herself be violated, as it were, the Gemara is also clear that while women were passive, they also often very much enjoyed it. The Gemara has a case of a woman who's being raped, and so they somebody comes along wanting to save her, and she says, no, don't do it, meaning she's already gotten to the point that she's enjoying it. How that could work is a whole discussion of its own. There are people today who would say it could never happen, but in the Gemara's time, the Gemara seems to understand that even if somebody starts out, even if a woman starts out in that situation not wanting it, it can happen. Then in the middle, she starts enjoying it. So there the halacha is that she's not liable anyway, even though she's enjoying it in the middle. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's because she went into it not wanting it. And if you go into it not wanting the fact, so coming back to our patient in the hospital, if he goes into the eating of the pork not wanting it, and then in the middle finds out that he enjoys eating it, that's not the case he's talking about. Since the person entered into the prohibition of the Torah to save his life or her life, that's allowed. Once it's allowed, the fact that there's enjoyment later on may not be great, but it's not a problem for our situation. But where, in order to get into the situation to begin with, it involves wanting it and liking it, so there Rav Moshe felt that that's not allowed even to save one's life. Now, that would be according to the Rambam, who said that the man is liable for the death penalty. But many Rishonim, especially Tosfot, held that if even a man is not liable for the death penalty. He's not allowed to do it, but if he does it, he's not liable for the death penalty. So theoretically, you could say that means they mean that if it's coerced, it's not a problem. So Moshe says, no, it's not that it's not a problem. It's that they hold that the onus aspect of it does apply to that situation. It's not that it's allowed, but that it's considered so much of an onus, so coerced, that he's not going to be liable for that. But Rav Moshe's understanding of the sources, therefore, is that when it comes to wanting to violate the Torah, even though you have the right to save your life in that way, nonetheless, if it's a desire issue, then it's going to be a problem. And that's why he thinks the Shach says that when it comes to an erva derabanan, one's allowed to actually fully violate. Chayvi lavin, what is not allowed to, because those are extensions of regular arayot. But when it comes to Rabbanan, he thinks Rabbanan allowed, and that's even though one is entering into it wanting to, but because it's Rabbanan, he thinks that that wasn't included in these things. The sexual aspect of it, let's remember, is only to make the point about what's the role of desire in terms of sins that is one is or is not allowed to violate. The Moshe's claim, therefore, from this sugya is that, in fact, one is never allowed to desire to violate the Torah, even to save one's life or even under coercion. And if desire is essential to the activity, that'll be a problem. So one is not allowed to want to eat the pork to save one's life. One is only allowed to eat the pork, even if after the fact there'll be some enjoyment in doing that. So when it comes to this sick person, so since we know that when he's in the hospital, they'll feed him prohibited foods, and they'll feed it to him even when he doesn't. It's not necessary for his healing, and he won't control himself. So Rav Moshe thinks you shouldn't put him in the hospital at all. And that's an interesting question. It's not Rav Moshe's question, so I won't get into it at length, but it's a question of lifting iver issues. There's another tshuva that I came across that I think will come to later on about Rav Moshe's view of davening in or using a room in a non-Orthodox shul. And he talks about those kinds of issues as well. Question becomes, at a point where this person can do this freely elsewhere, to what extent is it lifnei iver to put him in there? Meaning, if this, so far we've spoken about this kid that he seems to be violating the Torah in all sorts of ways, but it doesn't say whether he's eating non-kosher or not. But let's suppose, sadly, this was a young man who part of his mental illness and mental problems was he was not eating kosher regularly, not eating kosher. So then one could argue that putting him in this institution wouldn't be any additional providing him of non-kosher that he was getting outside of the home anyway, outside of the hospital anyway. Promotion doesn't deal with that. Not sure why. It's unclear, but he doesn't deal with that. He thinks of that. This is the problem that he's focused on, and therefore the pikuach nefesh part of it, that would be applied to the food that he needs. But since we're also putting him in a situation where he'll violate other isurim, he thinks that therefore it's a problem. Then he closes by saying, but all of this is extraneous, is unnecessary, because there's no actual demonstrable danger to this young man's life right now. All this was following a train of thought of, if the doctors were to say that if he's untreated, he's a danger to himself somewhere down the road, or that he'll get to altercation with the police and they might kill him and things like that, maybe there was room. So everybody was saying, even there, there's no room. But here, it's... It's not like that. So he says, with a minor, meaning under bar mitzvah age, you might have thought, he thinks that would be a problem too, because you might think that's considered ma'achilo by yadayim. We're feeding it to him with our hands, and the Chasam Sofer it said that was also in those terms. So therefore, Moshe says, turns out the kid's even already there, because the person who's his legal guardian wasn't observant, and so the legal guardian had put the kid in this institution, but there's somebody else who was the trustee of the estate who was overlooking the money issues, and Rav Moshe says he thinks that trustee should not be giving the money, should refuse to pay. Because you can't pay, and to help out the Ovri Avera, to help out with the violation of the sin in this situation, and even though that means they'll have to leave the institution, and I'm not sure, Moshe throws it in at the end, so I'm not sure that it played into his mind all that much, but he does say, and there's an option, you could send them to Israel, even though it's 1965, in Israel they have institutions like this, and the institutions in Israel, they have kosher food. So, and by the way, he says if his mother and father, who bequeathed him this money, meaning apparently that he's a double orphan, both of his parents are no longer living, and he has an estate that is paying for all his costs, he says if the parents were observant, then it's clearly true that the person, the trustee, can't give money for this because they wouldn't have wanted him in a non-kosher institution. So when they said give the money for what he needs, they clearly wouldn't have meant this as well. So, and even if the law, the government says that he has to do it, he has to do it because he has to follow the law and the government. He doesn't have to bear losses because he refuses to follow the government's laws. But if he can find a way not to do it in that way, Rav Moshe thought he should make sure not to do it that way. So it's interesting for this case itself in terms of this kid who's now, you know, if he's still around, who's now in his 60s or 70s. So he's not really our issue anymore, but more for what it reveals what Moshe felt about. We commonly say, oh, pikuach nefesh docheh hakol, saving lives pushes everything aside. But Moshe says that's a technical comment. It's not a complete comment. Technically, it pushes aside any specific prohibitions, but it doesn't push aside the obligation not to want to violate the Torah. To refuse, to never want to violate the Torah is an absolute requirement for all Jews, Rav Moshe felt, and there one could not save one's life. So usually it doesn't become a problem because we're in a situation where you have to, so it's not a question of wanting to, it's you have to. But two examples that Rav Moshe found of where wanting to becomes an issue was one for men, sexual relations. And the other one is when there's an amount one has to do to save one's life, and then one does more than that on purpose, that shows that that person wants to violate the Torah, and that remotion doesn't think was allowed for the savings of life. So, a response on the limits on savings lives for the 26th of Av. This is a response of a day. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.